This is your host, Webster Tarpley, here in Washington, D.C. Well, we're now in the eye of popular rage against the Wall Street finance oligarchs, and in particular against the greedy, rapacious executives of AIG. Let's always remember, though, the issue is not the peanuts. The $165 million to these particular finance oligarchs is the least of the story. The main issue here is to create a mass movement against derivatives to wipe out 1.5 quadrillion, 1.5 thousand trillion of derivatives. That's the goal, not to claw back peanuts from these executives in some kind of a dog and pony show, which risks becoming a diversion from the question of reform of the financial system and of the monetary system. Re-regulation is the issue, not bonuses. Start with wiping out derivatives. What do you do with derivatives? You shred them. You delete them. You burn them. You make them into birdcage liner. You use them for wrapping fish. But you destroy derivatives. You've got to get the dead weight of derivatives off the world. And, of course, the relevance is that although most accounts don't let you realize this, the AIG London Hedge Fund Office, AIG Financial Products, so-called, was dealing in derivatives. And we've been ahead of this story here. If you've been listening to this program for the last 2 or 3 weeks, you will know that the London Hedge Fund Office of AIG created almost $3 trillion of derivatives. $3 trillion. Make that the issue, not this paltry $162 million. Useful as that is to explain things to poor, benighted individuals who have no other understanding other than money in the hand. The derivative is hard to understand. It's complex. It's toxic. It's exotic. It's all those things that they say, but it's derivatives. And the question is, wipe out derivatives. So we're now in the land of Geithner, Tiny Tim. Is the guy who made this all possible. He's the one who allowed the door to open on these bonuses. And in that sense, the evil Geithner, as often happens in this Leibnizian universe that we live in, the evil Geithner has done good because he's created this moment of understanding, right, the prise de conscience of the world about the evils of derivatives, at least potentially. So we've got a tenant of the White House, the teleprompter in the White House, as he's now called increasingly, President Teleprompter. Well, he's not president of anything on this show because he's not constitutionally qualified. He's the tenant of the White House. He's Banker Barkey, of course. Banker Barkey, who convoys $10 trillion to the banks in exchange for about 300 or maybe 350 billion at the very most to human needs, infrastructure, and any hope of economic recovery. He's shooting at about 30 to 1 in favor of the bankers. $30 go to Wall Street for every dollar of crumbs that falls into the area of food stamps, unemployment benefits, Medicare, other kinds of health benefits, anything useful. 30 to 1. The parasites are winning with Obama, 30 to 1. What kind of a ball game is that? Ever been to a 30 to 1 ball game? Well, that's the kind of ball game that umpire Barkey is officiating at. So he's Banker Barkey. He's Bailout Barkey. Remember that the TARP, the first round of the TARP in October, could never have been passed without the active engagement of Obama personally. On the phone, arm twisting, threatening, cajoling, especially the Black Caucus, but not only, as the horrendous Haranan Pelosi has stated in one of her film clips that you can see in The Obama Deception from Alex Jones. Wonderful film clip of Pelosi, the harpy, saying, without Obama, we couldn't have passed this bill. Thanks, Barkey, for making the $700 billion possible. And, of course, he has no choice. He's Banker Barkey and Bailout Barkey because they own him. He's the candidate from Goldman Sachs, the candidate from David Rockefeller, the candidate from George Soros. What else do we need to know? He's the most Wall Street president, tenant of the White House, in many, many decades. When was the last one? Calvin Coolidge comes to mind as a possible competitor. Herbert Hoover, probably not. Herbert Hoover was much more independent of the banks as well. Here in this program, there are lots of things that Herbert Hoover dared to do in some tentative way that Obama is afraid to do. even though Herbert Hoover was ultimately a puppet of the banks as a Republican there in the 1920s coming out of the smoke-filled room. Bailout Barkey, Banker Barkey, when we're talking about Afghanistan and Sudan, increasingly, Butcher Barkey for the Third World and for these enemy states. And now we add another BB bonus Barkey. Barkey's bonus army. This time the bonus army came to Washington, and it was composed of AIG executives and lobbyists. So AIG, arrogance, incompetence, and greed. Yes, but above all, derivatives. Derivatives was the issue. The insurance companies were what they were, but as so often happens, a hedge fund was created. Hedge funds should be illegal. Hedge funds need to be banned. If that vehicle in London created $3 trillion of derivatives, which have generated $63 billion of losses for the taxpayers just in 3 months at the end of 2008, doesn't it make sense to consider banning, outlawing derivatives and, of course, hedge funds, which are the vehicles? So start with hedge funds and derivatives and take it from there. So the chronology on this stuff has become clearer in the hearings. Now, we've been following this, right? We remember Bernanke appearing before Senator Wyden and refusing to disgorge the names. We then remember Cohn, K-O-H-N, of the Federal Reserve, 20551, coming before the Dodd-Shelby Committee and also refusing to disgorge the names. And now, in the past week or so, we've learned more, right? They have disgorged the names. And what happened with this was, let's talk about the giveaways that really count. Not the $162 billion, of course, is bad enough. But what we find out here in the Washington Post of Thursday, March 19th, we find that as AIG was losing $62 billion on derivatives in late 2008, the New York Federal Reserve, under Tiny Tim Geithner, the operative and hack and clerk and grand commis or chinovnik of the Federal Reserve branch there in New York, which is really the leadership of the entire system. It's certainly the flagship. They created two vehicles for divesting these derivatives, meaning paying them off with your money. Unwinding means that you pay foreign bankers, not enough to pay the domestic parasites. God, they're bad enough. Now you've got to pay foreign parasites as well in a wonderful, it's a touching exercise in globalist solidarity, global-only solidarity. We have vehicles. One of them is called Maiden Lane 3. Maiden Lane 3, an entity created by the New York Federal Reserve. Maiden Lane is one of these streets down there by Wall Street. As a matter of fact, Maiden Lane 3 is the street that runs alongside one block where the New York Federal Reserve branch is located. That's, of course, where they've got this fantastic strong room filled with gold. So Maiden Lane 2, and they've got another one. They've got Maiden Lane 3. So those are the ones. And what did Maiden Lane 2 and Maiden Lane 3 do, according to the Washington Post of this past Thursday? They put out your money. What they did was they bought derivatives, and they bought assets that were valued at $30 billion in December of 2008, and they paid twice as much. That's $30 billion with a B, dollars of your money, dear friends, which has been funneled into the pockets of international parasitical bankers. So we'll name some names. I don't have the names of the executives who got the bonuses, but I know the bankers that got the derivatives money, and it's in the multi-billions. Back in a minute.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Here in Washington, D.C., calling your attention to a number of worthy ventures in the world of public opinion. Let's start with the Obama deception, available from Alex Jones over at Infowars.com. The leading edge right now of the public opinion battle to stop Obama. You're going to hear some stuff that Obama's going to try. He's going to try to bootleg his cap-and-trade carbon tax, a genocidal measure which will make production just about impossible in the U.S. He's going to try to bootleg that in. So you've got to distribute widely the Obama deception, that the person who pretends to be some kind of friend of the masses is really a tool of the banks, a completely controlled puppet of Wall Street, an agent of finance capital, not a socialist, but if anything, a fascist in the tradition of the young Mussolini. That is the early heady days of fascism are being acted out in front of you. Forget socialism. Socialism would be paradise compared to what we're getting here. This is the fascist corporate state, otherwise known as the public-private partnership. We've got the Obama deception from Alex Jones. We've got Surviving the Cataclysm, your guide through the worst financial crisis in human history. That's available from Progressive Press, www.progressivepress.com, www.progressivepress.com. And that's your guide to what's happening in historical context. It also has a chapter on how you can protect yourself and exercise your right to your ontological right to survive this stuff. But to survive for political action, hopefully, would be the goal. And my previous books, also indispensable at this point, Obama the Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate, and Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography. Both of those available on Amazon. Both of them available, well, the Postmodern Coup available in a Japanese edition and in a German edition. Obama, wie ein US-Präsident gemacht wird. That's from Amazon of Germany, Amazon of Japan, Amazon of the US. We'll get you any and all of those. If you look at Amazon France, you can go back to La Terreur Fabriquée. There's also an Italian edition of 9/11 Synthetic Terror, La Fabbrica del Terrore. So we have all this going, and new initiatives are in progress to stymie the finance oligarchs. Let's just focus, though, on AIG, arrogance, incompetence, and greed, and their relation to the teleprompter in the White House, and Tiny Tim Geithner, his running dog on financial issues. Here we got to find out who did get this money, right? The AIG got $160 billion. They're getting $30 billion more. They're going to get $200 billion more after that, unless you stop them through political action. Calling for your mommy or the free market or the tooth fairy will not help. Political action is going to be necessary. So here's who got the money. This was basically a support operation, as we've said. It's a bailout of derivatives. It's a price support operation for credit default swaps. Credit default swaps, along with collateralized debt obligations, structured investment vehicles, mortgage-backed securities, asset-backed securities, auction rate securities, those are derivatives. So these CDS, credit default swaps, were plummeting, right? They're toxic. Nobody wants to buy them. So in comes the Federal Reserve with Maiden Lane 2 and Maiden Lane 3 vehicles for the New York branch of the Federal Reserve, meaning Tiny Tim Geithner at the time. They decide to bail out Société Générale of France. Société Générale of France. Remember, they're the ones who almost blew apart the world system in January of 2008 when it was rumored, well, they did take a huge derivatives loss. Société Générale came forward with derivatives valued at $8 billion, and the U.S. Fed, under Tiny Tim Geithner, really, and Bernanke signing off too, decided to pay them $16 billion. Hey, it's Christmas. Christmas, Joyeux Noël for Société Générale. Instead of $8 billion that they could have gotten on the market, they got $16 billion for those assets. Now, the question is, of course, if Société Générale of France is such an indispensable part of the financial system, why doesn't Sarkozy of France bail them out? How about Trichet of the European Central Bank. Oh, what solidarity, what globaloney we have among these international parasites. There got to be all sorts of reasons. There got to be other deals underneath that get back to other places here in the U.S. And sure enough, we're told that Goldman Sachs, the home base of Hanky Panky Paulson, the home of Bob Rubin, who really is the key grandfather figure of this entire thing, right? You're dealing with the Bob Rubin clique, which includes Summers, which includes Geithner, which includes Mary Shapiro at the Securities and Exchange Commission, Gary Gansler at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. They're all ultimately protégés or protégés of protégés of Bullet Bob Rubin of Goldman Sachs and Citibank. So Goldman Sachs comes forward with $6 billion of derivatives on the market, so to speak. Street price for those derivatives, $6 billion. And they get $14 billion in assets. You can check these figures. Don't take my word for it. Washington Post, Thursday, March 19th, 2009. And that doesn't end there. Deutsche Bank comes forward. Merrill Lynch comes forward. They're in the process of being acquired by Bank of America. And they come through. So they also get sweetheart deals for their rotten, toxic derivatives, which should be illegal. They should be wiped out and put into the shredder. But instead, they get not even top dollar, but twice top dollar, right? If you come forward with $8 billion of derivatives and they give you $16 billion in your Société Générale, well, if Deutsche Bank is so important, why doesn't Merkel the Ferkel bail them out? What's wrong with the, again, European Central Bank in Frankfurt, right across the street from Deutsche Bank? Why don't they bail them out? How come the U.S. government has to bail out a French bank and a German bank? And now we're talking billions. We're not talking $165 million, outrageous as that figure is by itself. We're also told here in the Washington Post that Maiden Lane II completed purchases of $22.5 billion in mortgage-related securities. Now, that's their design. They want you to think that it's some kind of mortgage-backed security from the subprime mortgage area. These are derivatives. Remember, the main issue is derivatives, derivatives, derivatives. If you look at Dateline NBC over the time that this program is going to be available for our listeners, this guy Hansen is going to do a three-part series about the origin of the crisis on NBC. And trust me, he's already signaled he's going to be talking about subprime mortgages, not about derivatives. So everybody agrees on this demagogic thing. Let's blame the poor for the depression. Ridiculous. Blame the derivatives bankers and wipe them out, shut them down. Back in a minute.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. We're taping the program here on the 20th of March. We're told that April is the coolest month, according to T.S. Eliot. Maybe it will be in financial terms as well. The little mini rally organized by the plunge protection team of the past 7 days is running out of steam. Very ominous results on Thursday, March 19th for the banks. They began losing again. Citibank down 15-20%, whatever it was. Looking bad, but that's really the least of it. We're probably in an economy which is shifting gears into hyperinflation, and I'll give you the rundown on that in just a minute. Let's wrap up on AIG. The point here is these bonuses, if you're interested in the bonuses, and it is useful to organize people, the point is take the rage around the bonuses and say, hey, buddy, you realize you're getting all worked up about $165 million in bonuses to fat cats, hyenas, jackals, predators, lampreys, and so forth. You should really be concerned about the 1.5 quadrillion of derivatives, because that's essentially what AIG London, the hedge fund, represents. You should be angry at hedge funds. You should try to, you should mobilize to shut down hedge funds, regulate them out of existence, and shred and delete 1.5 quadrillion of absolutely cancerous toxic derivatives, the model being the general default on all war debts and reparations of 1932 to 1933, which we'll talk about in an upcoming segment also. The way that this happened with the bonuses was that in the stimulus now, and we're now very much in the Obama years, we're in the Obama regime. The Obama regime came forward with the stimulus, which was worked out then with Ms. Pelosi there and Reid. And into this bill were placed provisions placed by, in particular, Dodd, but also by others, that would have limited bonuses. And after much lying, Dodd of the Senate Banking Committee, who's a creature of the banks, of course, Dodd came forward now and said, I took it out. I took out the ban on bonuses or the limits on bonuses because Tiny Tim Geithner of the Treasury told me to do it because they were afraid of lawsuits. How idiotic. Afraid of lawsuits. Imagine a jury of 12 people called upon to decide whether it was a crime for the federal government to stop these hyenas, jackals, and parasites from getting millions and millions of dollars of ill-gotten loot at public expense after they had created $3 trillion of derivatives. Well, I don't think that you could win any such case. I think this guy there is afraid of lawsuits. It's just absurd. I mean, people in Wall Street get sued every time they turn around. That's why they have these legal departments. The idea that Geithner was afraid of lawsuits is absurd. You'd win every one of those if you had the proper approach to framing the issue, let's say, in populist terms in the courtroom. So that's a lot of baloney. Geithner is in there defending the greed, the rapacity, and indeed the management culture of these clowns. And that's clear. So Barkey's man is running interference for Wall Street. Well, of course, what do you expect? Barkey is owned by Wall Street. Geithner is owned by Wall Street or incarnates Wall Street. If he's not the brain of Wall Street, he's the heart or the stomach or the liver of Wall Street, some vital organ. This is a Wall Street regime. Whoever told you anything else? Certainly not here. It's a regime of Wall Street puppets. Geithner is really not a servant of Obama. He's one of his handlers, one of the palace guard. Remember, though, that everything that Geithner does is dictated by Summers, and everything that Summers does is at least inspired by Rubin. And since we're dealing with this Obama occupation of the White House, remember, Paul Adolf Volcker of the Treasury and the Federal Reserve and Wall Street is sniffing around there also. So really, the only adequate answer to this stuff is to impeach or oust Geithner, Summers, Volcker. Get rid of them. Fire Geithner. Down with Geithner. It's time for the first cabinet officer of the Obama regime to exercise ministerial responsibility. Remember, if 9/11 happens and you're the Secretary of Defense, you should resign. If you're the Attorney General, you should resign. If you're the head of the FBI, resign. Ministerial responsibility. Otherwise, you have a situation where cabinet officers can say, the more I fail, the more power I should get. In other words, the more horrible things happen on my watch, the more power I wish to accumulate in my hands. And the obvious, every parliamentary regime in particular in the world has this idea that if you're the transportation minister and there's a train crash, you have to quit. If you're the sports minister and the team does terribly in the World Soccer Championship, you have to quit. It's just that way. It's nothing personal. It's just political business. So out with Geithner, down with Geithner, fire Geithner, and while you're firing Geithner, get Larry Summers, that gangster, out of the White House. Break the links that allow Bob Rubin of Goldman Sachs and Citibank to run the show from behind the scenes. Get rid of other assets of Citibank. Make sure that Daschle is not influencing anything. That's harder to do. And then there's Bernanke. In the hearings of the AIG boss, Liddy, who is an insurance executive, a dollar-a-year man, we're told, he was brought in. He says, well, we told Bernanke of the Fed everything we were doing. We've told them all about this all the time. So Bernanke has been hushing up the news of these outrageous bailouts, of the bonuses. Bailout is really more outrageous. The bonuses are outrageous, too, and Bernanke hid them. Bernanke lied. It's time for Bernanke to resign. Impeach Bernanke. Get rid of him. Helicopter Ben must go. And we've got his deputy, Donald L. Cohn, K-O-H-N. He's got to be ousted as well. So let's oust the existing economic team of the tenant of the White House, Barky Obama, the banker's tenant of the White House. So let's get rid of them, and then we can see where we go from here. So it's time to get rid of the worst malefactors among these finance oligarchs and get rid of them. So notice also, though, before we go any further, Limbaugh. Limbaugh, he has to qualify as the Duke of Austria for his performance in the past week. Erzherzog von Österreich, Rush Limbaugh, supports the bonuses of AIG. Limbaugh loves it. He says, that's the free market, baby. Let's have more bonuses for the AIG predators. Limbaugh, again, as a typical Austrian, always attacked the government, always let Wall Street off the hook. Wall Street never does anything wrong for Limbaugh and his Austrian friends. Remember, he said he's a follower of von Hayek. Now, von Hayek people tell me, oh, no, he's not pure enough. Well, I'm afraid we have to take Limbaugh at face value. He says that he loves von Hayek and he follows them, and his economics is a version of the Austrian Chicago synthesis, let us say. You can call him a vulgar Austrian, but an Austrian nevertheless. The Duke of Austria, Erzherzog von Österreich, Rush Limbaugh, supports AIG, supports the bonuses, and he says there's a rising tide of populism. In other words, anybody who wants to interfere with the rewards of the achiever class, he calls them, the achievers. He comes in to defend the privileges of the achievers and the fat cats as against the deadbeats and the losers, who are necessarily the vast majority of the U.S. population. So the rest of us out here are the Okies, the rednecks, the losers, the deadbeats, the marginals. That's a good one. We'll be hearing that one soon. That was especially used in the shock therapy in Russia in the 1990s. We're going to be told, too, that the majority of the American people are marginals. Back in a minute.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Radio, Webster Talker here in Washington, D.C. Now, next week, that is to say on the 2nd of April, there's going to be the long-awaited meeting of the group of 20 large economies, 20 nations representing the majority of world economic activity, that is to say European Union, U.S., Canada, Japan, selected big third world like China, India, Brazil, Indonesia, and so forth, a couple of Africans in there, too. That's the group of 20 in London. Act Independent, the Philadelphia platform, will be addressing a call to those 20 governments and to all governments and political parties and unions around the world to do essentially one big thing out of that conference, to freeze derivatives. Freeze derivatives, or if they're legislation permits it, to wipe them out, to do as much as every executive can. Every government has an executive of some kind. They are called on to act against the derivatives plague and the zombie banks, because that's what we're dealing with. The AIG is, in effect, a zombie non-bank bank, a zombie bank which is not quite a bank, but like investment banks or credit card companies or other things, is acting like a zombie bank. The hedge fund created in London was, in effect, a zombie quasi-bank. These things have got to be shut down. This is the greatest menace to world civilization. Hedge funds and derivatives, they must go. Shut them down. Close their malignant career. Before about 1990, derivatives were minimal and marginal. Hedge funds were hardly heard of. Today we're told there's something like 15 to 20,000 hedge funds, all parasitical. Not one of them manufactures a shoe, a loaf of bread, an auto tire, or anything that humanity can use. It's a purely parasitical subtraction from the entire output of the world economy. And, of course, the mischief that they do is unending, as in the case of one hedge fund creating $3 trillion of credit default swaps and costing the U.S. taxpayers probably $500 billion. And that's one hedge fund out of 15 to 20,000, depending on how you want to define a hedge fund. So we're calling on the governments coming together in London on April 20th. Wipe out derivatives. If you can't wipe them out because of legal complications, freeze them. Have a moratorium. We would use the word moratorium, except in today's eclipse of humanity, eclipse of culture, and general downturn, nobody knows what a moratorium is, so that's not a good word. I wouldn't use the word moratorium. Call it a freeze, call it a ban. In other words, the point is to wipe out derivatives or to at least get moving in that direction. So go as far as you can down the road towards deleting them, shredding them, burning them, birdcage, wrapping fish, you know the routine. And if at very minimum, freeze them for the duration of the crisis. Freeze them for the duration of the crisis. So and wipe out, regulate hedge funds. But as soon as you regulate a hedge fund, it's not a hedge fund anymore. So that's relatively easy to do. Any form of compulsory regulation of a hedge fund basically means that it's not in existence anymore as a hedge fund. And that's exactly what you want, because we did fine without hedge funds. Please don't tell us all this wonderful creativity of new financial products when we're groaning under trillions of dollars of bailouts, 10 trillion to 11 trillion and counting of U.S. taxpayer money from the Fed and the Treasury going essentially into the derivatives bubble and the nefarious activities of these hedge funds. So that's it. You can choose. On the one side, hedge funds that issue derivatives, you want them. Civilization collapses, and you're looking at genocide. And this is what's going on before your eyes right now. The Barkey Obama regime is a hedge fund banker's delight. It's the regime of the U.S. where the Wall Street interest, the hedge fund interest, above all, the derivatives interest, is preponderant to a degree that we have not seen since Calvin Coolidge. And again, isn't it interesting? He's Barkey Obama, the so-called left-wing community organizer, the absolute servant of finance capital. He is finance capital in the White House. No other interest counts. Heavy industry, forget it. Silicon Valley, pharmaceuticals, nothing. Biotech, nothing. Agriculture, nothing. Nothing of nothing. Only Wall Street. Wall Street, first, last, and always under Obama. Now, let's see. We're going to get back to this question of wiping out derivatives. There's a huge financial precedent for this. It's going to take us back into the 1930s. But let's look at the past week. Now, we remember we went through, the previous week, we went through the Lautenbach speech to the Friedrich List Society. And again, this is written up in Surviving the Cataclysm, Your Guide to the Worst Financial Crisis of Human History, available from www.progressivepress.com. Lautenbach says there are four ways to go. You can You can try the deflationary route. You can try cutting expenditure. Try to balance the budget. Let things go bankrupt. Have large unemployment, deflation, and so forth. During the Depression, this was tried by von Hayek and von Mises, the two leading lights of Austria. It was represented above all by Andrew Mellon, the U.S. Secretary of the Treasury, who dominated Harding, Coolidge, and Hoover. And basically, Republicans today, I think we can say from Ron Paul to Shelby and others, basically want this. They want what we could call liquidationism. It says, let the Depression do its work. And, you know, maybe in the process of doing that, you'll bust the unions. That's what Shelby talks about all the time. Let's turn the crisis against the trade unions, wipe out the UAW, wipe out other unions, drive down the standard of living, and then on the backs of the newly impoverished, you can start some kind of a new bubble. So that would be the budget balancing. Lautenbach says, no, this is totally counterproductive. There is the possibility of attempting a consumer-led recovery through the government budget. This was done by some, to some degree, you can see a hint of this in the stimulus bill coming out of certain Democrats in the House in particular. I would say maybe the French Popular Front of Léon Blum, 1936, was an attempt to have a consumer-led recovery. That did not work, did not bring recovery. Then we have the easy money outlet, the alternative, which Lautenbach talks about. If you go with big liquidity injections, 0% interest rates, and further injections, we just had a $1 trillion injection in the past week by the Bernanke Federal Reserve. This is basically what Lautenbach talks about as the third alternative. The TARP, the AIG bailout, the Citibank bailout. It's what Helicopter Ben wrote about, too. Helicopter Ben said if you have a depression, then you can dump bales of money on people's lawns, and that will turn into a recovery. Of course, you could say that sounds like a consumer-led, but not with Helicopter Ben. He means on the lawns of bankers. So easy money, and of course the problem with that is liquidity injections turn into hot money, and they flee. And that's what we see. AIG sends its money to Deutsche Bank and Societe Generale, and Barclays too, according to what we've heard. And remember, Citibank took its money and lent it to Dubai and India and Israel and all around the world. So if you try the easy money route, it turns into hot money and it flees. What you're left with is the infrastructure variant. Permanent additions of valuable capital goods that increase the capital stock of a nation, facilitate recovery by increasing the productive powers of labor. That's your route, and we can do it better than Lautenbach imagined because we can add in the science drivers, things like the exploration, permanent colonization, and indeed industrial production on the moon, Mars, and nearby objects in the solar system, catching energy in space, solar energy in orbit. This becomes interesting. And the biomedical research to defeat diseases, to realize economies in healthcare by providing cures, and the high-energy physics to get your nuclear fusion, thermonuclear fusion, and the next generation. This stuff was tried basically under Lend-Lease. That's your example, I think, Lend-Lease and national banking. Back in a minute. Second hour here, Webster Tarpley in Washington, D.C. Just to wrap up what we were talking about at the end of the previous hour, the the variant that gets you out of the depression is to force your privately owned central bank to do the bidding of the people and the government by nationalization. But rather than come at it from the point of view of nationalization as an ideological demand, which is absolutely justified, politically savvy is to simply say to the central bank, you are forced to rediscount infrastructure bonds, bonds having to do with the space program, the biomedical research program, the high energy physics program. You are forced, you're obliged by law to rediscount, that is to disgorge cash in exchange for bonds deriving from those areas. So what you're doing is launching a recovery led by federal lending, not federal spending. Federal spending has a role, but the main burden is federal lending through a nationalized central bank transformed into a national bank in the Hamiltonian sense. And that is what Lautenbach recommended. He said, we've got to force the Reichsbank in this case to rediscount bonds deriving from infrastructure. And we can do that much more broadly now with the science drivers and a much broader definition of infrastructure. 100 high temperature pebble bed fourth generation nuclear reactors to renew the electricity grid. Why not get building? Drill for oil. Sure. Do the other obvious things in the energy area, right? Start working on renewing the grid, not from the point of view of some phantom of windmill energy suitable for Don Quixote and other fools, but from the point of view of a real modern technology baseload capacity. You've got to build 1,000 new hospitals in the high plains, in particular rural America, and the inner cities to replace what's been destroyed thanks to monetarism over the past 40 years. You've got to have your coast-to-coast maglev, probably build 50,000 miles of maglev railways within a couple of years. You've got to put a modern, attractive mass transit system around every American city in the trillions. You've got to basically get rid of the infrastructure deficit, which is in excess of $5 trillion. Do that through federal lending, off budget, through your nationalized national bank. Call it the fourth bank of the United States. After Alexander Hamilton, after James Monroe, after the attempt by Henry Clay and Daniel Webster to create the third bank, let's call this one the fourth bank. The American system leads you out of the depression. Now, the moment in the New Deal where you had this principle of rediscount guarantee is, of course, Lend-Lease. If you got a contract for military production under Lend-Lease, you could take that to your local banker, get cash for it. The local banker could turn around and force the Federal Reserve to disgorge cash, and that's what you want. So they're basically doing the bidding of the government. They're forced to rediscount the bonds that are issued not only by the federal government but also by local and state governments. That gets you a recovery. Now, the next scandal is coming up. What's the next scandal? Hey, the next scandal is hedge funds and banks that get money from the TARP selling the U.S. dollar short. How about that? We've had the variation where the bonuses are paid by AIG, much bigger bonuses, of course, by Bank of America. Bank of America, $1 to $2 billion in bonuses. Merrill Lynch, Pierce Finner and Smith is in the area of $3 to $4 billion of bonuses. So we've got the entire bonus question. The bonus armies or anti-bonus armies are going to be marching on Wall Street with the pitchforks. We've also then got the really big issue, which is the $3 trillion of derivatives issued by that nefarious AIG hedge fund and other institutions, up to 1.5 quadrillion, 1.5 thousand trillion of toxic anti-human derivatives that have got to be wiped out. But now we're going to have a new phase. The dollar has gone through a turning point in this past week, and we've got to look at this very, very carefully. Here's your headline. Morgan Stanley, recipients of $25 billion under the TARP. They're flooding. They're flush with cash. Morgan Stanley, paid by you, has put out an advisory saying it's time to short the dollar. It's time to short the dollar. Hedge funds, be alert. It's time to start selling the U.S. dollar short and drive the U.S. dollar down into the cellar and induce hyperinflation. You're going to get these Wall Street parasites and raptors and hyenas, jackals, lampreys, and the rest. They're going to start selling the dollar short. Now, the precedent for this is last summer, in the summer of 2008, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, and a school of thousands of predatory hedge funds were the ones who drove oil up to $150, $160 a barrel, price of gas $4.50, $5 per gallon in many places. That was brought to you by the free market. You can thank the free market. The free market is dominated by Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, and the hedge funds. As long as you have a deregulated market, I can tell you who's going to dominate it. Blankfein of Goldman Sachs, Mack of Morgan Stanley, and then thousands of hedge funds around them, right? They're pilot fish as they go out on their predatory raids. So those were the ones who had you paying $5 a gallon for gas. Out of every gallon of gas you bought, $1 was in effect a compulsory subsidy to Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley. So that was one side of it. Now they've got something worse. That was their act for 2008. The act of Morgan Stanley for 2009 is no longer to go long oil, although they're going long oil and they're driving that up. That will actually be a part of it too. But the centerpiece is to go short on the dollar. And one of the, I believe this is an analyst from Morgan Stanley, Yilin Nie is this person's name, Y-I-L-I-N-N-I-E, a globalized finance bureaucrat of Morgan Stanley, says, bye-bye dollar, meaning goodbye dollar, not buy it, but sell it. Bye-bye dollar, sell, sell, sell. That's the word on Wall Street. The dollar is now going down, and that means hyperinflation for you. So what's the background? This past Wednesday, and again, we're talking here on March 20th, Friday, the dollar had its worst day in approximately a quarter century, all in all. It was the worst dollar week in 24 years. The dollar, from Thursday to Thursday, lost 5.2%. Compared to a basket of currencies. You can say the dollar is now a basket case. This is now the barky dollar, which is being inflicted on us. The dollar index fell during the course of the week from about 89 and down to 86. It has broken below the 60-day moving average. So, Wednesday was the third worst day for the U.S. dollar on markets ever in history, and it is in particular the worst day since 1985, which is an interesting date. You can read this. You can read all about this in Surviving the Cataclysm, as usual. 1985, there was this meeting of the main financial powers of the world, presided over by James Baker III, at the Plaza Hotel in New York, right? Grand Army Plaza, the southeast corner of Central Park, how elegant across from the Pierre and so forth. And they decided to put the dollar down. That was the worst day so far. This is the worst now since 1985. So the dollar has taken a tremendous dive, and Morgan Stanley says, pile on, drive it down. Hyperinflation likely to result.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to War. top there in Washington, D.C. So the next scandal, after the AIG bonuses, after the Bank of America bonuses, which are in the billions, the Merrill Lynch bonuses, many more billions, after the 1.5 quadrillion derivative scandal, here's another one. The hyperinflation scandal, brought to you by Morgan Stanley and other banks, which you have subsidized. In other words, the noxious, poisonous existence of Morgan Stanley is possible thanks to you. And their thanks to you is they're bidding up every commodity, but they're also bidding down the dollar. They're selling the U.S. dollar short. So the call is from Morgan Stanley to short the dollar against the euro with a short-term target of $145 to the euro. Now, right now, we're in the area of, what, 135, 136, and that's after the dollar has had its worst week in 24 years and the worst, third worst day in history. The third worst dollar day in all of history was this past Wednesday. Isn't it funny that the controlled corporate media were not interested in telling you that? Right now, the euro is at 1.3575, so call it 1.36, close enough. Morgan Stanley is telling you to short the dollar against the euro with a 145 target. We've just had the worst week in 24 years, the worst day since 1985 for the dollar, the third worst day in history. Proceeding, as we say, pari passu, along with the fall of the dollar. We just had the worst day for U.S. Treasury securities in 26 years. Now, this is the one to watch. Those Chinese guys last week were saying, hey, spendthrift Yankees, and Yankees, let's, well, hey, spendthrift Americans, you've got to guarantee us that you're going to pay. And I think they probably had some intelligence of what was coming. The day that all this happened, of course, Wednesday, was the day that Helicopter Ben came forward with his latest brainstorm, which is to dump more than $1 trillion of cash into the system. Now, this is done through open market operations, as you know. They get themselves together, and it's done through the New York Federal Reserve, right? Tiny Tim Geithner's old bailiwick. They, in this case, if they want to inject money, they start buying Treasury securities and spewing dollar bills out. So they buy Treasury paper, buy Treasury bonds, Treasury bills, Treasury notes, out go the dollars. So they did a $1 trillion cash injection in one day. Now, that indicates something very serious going on in the background. And this is, I'm not talking about the stock market. I'm talking about disintegration of the system. About 10 days ago, the dollar was at about $125 to a euro. Now it's 136. And that makes this entire equation much less attractive to foreign investors. You get a double loss. If you were holding T-bonds, the dollars have gone down by about 5%, and your T-bonds have had the worst day in 26 years. So this is directly created by Helicopter Ben. The outlook now is aggressive inflationary outlook. I would say tending towards hyperinflation. We can actually be in the moment where the gears are changed. Oil has gone up 7%. Oil right now is about $52 a barrel. This is the highest since last 28th of November. Remember, the end of last November was the interim low of the stock market. So oil is going up. We've also got a general pattern of commodity inflation. Copper is at a 4.5-month high. We've got wheat going up 5% in just a couple of days. Rice up 4% in a couple of days. Soy up 3% on the May soy contract. So looks like hyperinflation city may be coming our way after all of the Sturm und Drang. So thank Morgan Stanley and thank Yilin Ni, saying that the banks are now shorting the dollar and bye-bye dollar, sell, sell, sell. The interim target, $1.45 to the euro. Now, as Volcker always said, you can read about this in Surviving the Cataclysm, Volcker always said that his nightmare was a dollar slide which starts and cannot be stopped. It looks to me like Helicopter Ben, in his stupidity and in his radically anti-historical approach to everything, even though he claims to be a historian of the Great Depression, he's a historian of Friedman's marijuana-clouded view of the Great Depression, what you find in Milton Friedman's lunatic monetary history of the United States. That seems to be what Helicopter Ben has been studying. He's saying that he's learned the lessons. Well, he hasn't learned the lessons. He may have set in motion this mudslide of the dollar, and, of course, the stock market will continue to respond to that. All signs are, therefore, that we may be exiting the temporary valley of deflation that we've been in and heading into hyperinflation. And, of course, it should be superfluous to point out to people that one way to protect yourself against that is to get a gold hedge. Personally, right, you have the right to survive. Obama is talking about a deficit of $1.75 trillion. Now, that would not be serious if he had a serious program for economic recovery, but he does not. He has the opposite. And that means, therefore, that the fires of hyperinflation may start to burn. Now, let me just point out the relationship of the foreign exchange to hyperinflation. If you look, as I hope you will, in Surviving the Cataclysm, your guide to the worst financial crisis in human history, you will find two chapters. One is called Models of Collapse. That simply means things like the crash of 1929 or crash of 1987. These are not the most serious. Those are just collapses. Just means that prices go down. But banks don't generally, go bankrupt or institutions are not really changed. What we're getting into now, of course, and which we have been in now for a year since the Bear Stearns crisis, is disintegration of the world financial system. And there we have to look at the hyperinflationary model of disintegration, where the entire currency, as well as a lot of other things, are wiped out. Now, the great source on this is he was the Italian finance attaché in Berlin during the 1923 hyperinflation. This is Bresciani Turoni. And you don't have to go and read Bresciani Turoni in the original, because I have done this for you. And you can get this, I think, really the only place is Surviving the Cataclysm. And it starts in late 1922, starts with the assassination of Walter Rathenau, the foreign minister, and it reaches a hyperinflation of 1 trillion to 1, 1 trillion to 1. Think about that in dollar terms, and we'll be back in a minute. Hyperinflation. Helicopter Ben has dumped $1 trillion of cash, a very large liquidity injection, $1 trillion of cash into the system, as they call it, by the open market activities of the New York branch of the Federal Reserve. They have bought Treasury securities. It's interesting that despite the fact that they're buying Treasury securities massively, the Treasury securities had their worst day in a quarter century this past Wednesday when all of this was brought about. Everybody is also wondering if they're doing something as radical as a $1 trillion plus liquidity injection, and they're selling all kinds buying all kinds of federal bonds. What's going on in the background? Has some huge hedge fund gone bankrupt or some other horrendous cataclysmic event? So that's what's going on. And remember, the international value of the dollar is the value of the dollar, as Germany found out in the Weimar Republic, especially when you're a debtor nation. And thanks to the monetarists, thanks to the Friedmanites and the Hayekians who have been running the government now, because they have, the deregulation, privatization, union busting, race to the bottom, ship the jobs overseas, free trade, buyer of last resort gang. Well, we have a debtor nation here in the U.S., and we're vulnerable, therefore, to what happened to Weimar Germany. Now, the Weimar Germany, let me just stress, this was political. This was done by the British. This was because Walter Rathenau, the foreign minister, had engaged in the Rapallo Treaty with the Soviet Union, or Soviet Russia, I guess, as it was at that time. And this was exchanges of German technology for Russian natural resources, the natural way to go, especially when you have two pariah states, right? One was Russia pariah because they were commies, and Germany pariahs because of World War One. So Rathenau did the obvious thing and made this deal. The British were very, very much alarmed with that, so they declared currency war against the German mark and began driving down the price of the German mark on international exchanges, and that's what created the hyperinflation inside the country. We reached a point of 1% inflation per minute, as you can read in Surviving the Cataclysm, and all the stories about the horrors of hyperinflation are collected in here from various eyewitness accounts. But by November 20th, 1923, it was 4.2 trillion marks for a dollar. That was the official exchange rate. The street price, estimated by Bresciani Turoni, again, the authority on this stuff, who lived through it from the Italian embassy in Berlin, approximately 12 trillion marks for a dollar. So not the 4.2 trillion official rate, but if you wanted to get something on the street, by November 20th of 1923, it was almost 12 trillion marks to buy a dollar. So that may be coming, and if it comes, you can thank Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs, because they're out there leading the charge to short the dollar and go long these commodities at the same time. Obviously, gold has done very well. I should stress this. Gold had a $70 increase, a 7 point, well, you can do the math, a $70 increase up to $958 an ounce, along with other commodities, oil, copper, wheat, rice, soybeans, as we've said. Commodities going up now and U.S. dollar going down. Got to see how the British pound fares in all this. The British pound seems to be up 7.3%. The British are hoping that the banking crisis in Eastern Europe, in Ukraine, Poland, the Balkans, and so forth, will drag down France, Germany, Italy to the point where the pound can come out of this as a survivor. So remember that idea of the last man standing is the winner. This is the Bank of England philosophy. Competitive devaluations, or whatever it is, beggar your neighbor always. The British are trying to come out of this on top once again. They're asserting London as the world financial capital, and they're being helped by these Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley, Wall Street hyenas, jackals, and hedge fund operators who are essentially destroying the U.S. currency, and you're paying them to do it. How about that? You're going to get paid in dollars no matter what. So if those dollars collapse, then you've got hyperinflation. Now, there are other aspects to it, right? You might find your debts eroded too as the dollars go down, but you got to think about it, right? Most people are dependent on wages, and in order to get wages, you've got to have a dollar that's worth something. Anyway, these dislocations are tremendous. Now, the theoretical question of wiping out the derivatives. Let's look at this in the light of the experience of the 1930s. And again, this is in the Models of Collapse chapter and the Models of Disintegration chapter from Surviving the Cataclysm. Here's the problem. Fictitious capital. This is where the market goes wrong. The market is insane. The market is collective insanity. And if you say, I want the free market, you're saying, I want to die. I want genocide. We have the question of fictitious capital. Today, this is the derivatives. There's 1.5 quadrillion of paper that the market says, or the dominant figures who dominate the market, the men who run the market tell us, these derivatives are worth money. It's fictitious. These are paper property titles, paper claims on income, paper claims on income streams, which have been fabricated outside of the world of production, outside of plant, equipment, wages, employment, useful commodity production, no hard commodities, no tangible physical wealth ever involved, completely outside of that, and therefore in contradiction to it. In other words, the more derivatives you have, the poorer an economy you will have. What's the analog in the Great Depression of the 1930s? It's easy. It's the reparations imposed on Germany at Versailles under this war guilt clause of the Versailles Treaty. They came forward and said, well, Germany, you're responsible for the war. There's really no way to prove it. I think the balance of the guilt really goes to the British government, Sir Edward Grey, various protégés of King Edward VII, who died in 1910. There's a group in England which wants war. There's a group in France which wants war. Certainly a group in Austria. Count Berchtold of Austria wants war. There's a group of Slavophiles in Moscow, St. Petersburg in this case, who want war. To show a group in Germany which wants war, I think, is the hardest of all of those tasks. But nevertheless, in the Hall of Mirrors, it was said, Germany is responsible, therefore Germany has to pay 269 billion gold marks, equal to 32 billion U.S. dollars. It's the value of the total real estate, plant, and equipment in Germany. It's some very large percentage of that. It's like 70-80% of the total value of everything in Germany has to be paid out. So what this does is it injects a colossal sum of fictitious capital claiming 5% interest into the entire system. And together with this go the war debts owed by England and France to Wall Street, to the House of Morgan in particular, who was the financial buying agent for the Allies in the U.S. So we get this situation where the Germans have no money to pay. Wall Street, Morgan loans the money to Germany so they can pay the reparations to England and France. England and France pay the war debts back to Morgan, and this crazy carousel, which is destroying world production, goes on and on. Notice that world trade never recovered between 1919 and 1929, and then it went down, never recovered to the level of 1914. So the reparations and the war debts were strangling world production in the same way that the derivatives are strangling world production today. What can be done? You've got to get rid of them. You've got to delete them and shred them. Back in a minute.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
To World Crisis Radio, Webster Topley in Washington, D.C., recommending once again the Obama Deception, available from Infowars.com. Alex Jones, it's the best political documentary to come out of the United States in many, many years. It is a masterpiece of political documentary. Remember, Surviving the Cataclysm, Your Guide to the Worst Financial Crisis in Human History, from www.progressivepress.com. Also remember Obama, the Postmodern Coup, the Making of a Manchurian Candidate, and Barack H. Obama, Barack Hoover Obama, from Amazon.com. Also, take a look at the Globe. You can get the Globe dated March 23rd, still on newsstands for several more days. Obama Mutiny, and this is GIs in the war theaters in Iraq reject Obama as commander-in-chief because he's a foreigner. He does not qualify as president of the United States. If he wants to qualify, come forward with your full detailed birth certificate. We want to see the vault copy. We want to see the full birth certificate, the hospital, the time, the doctors, the witnesses, and all the rest of this stuff, not this silly certificate of live birth, which even the state of Hawaii won't accept that for many purposes. There is one little undercurrent in this thing. There's a person called Orly Tates who has injected herself into this matter. Listeners to this program know that the pioneer, the nerve and fist of this effort has been Philip J. Berg of Philadelphia, who is a New Deal Democrat. You can see, obviously, that for the purposes of mass brainwashing, there's a certain interest in getting a reactionary, a right-winger, to be the lead person against Obama, so that you can keep this dog and pony show going. That seems to be the role of a certain Orly Tates, O-R-L-Y-T-A-I-T-Z. This charming lady seems to come on the scene as a counter-gang against Phil Berg. Her political judgment, not so good. And what she seems to have done is to reveal the names of some soldiers in Iraq who are getting ready to protest this. And I think this is not good. This is where bad judgment turns into something even more dubious. But Phil Berg is mentioned. So soldier mutiny against Obama, GI in Iraq rejects commander-in-chief, and there are hundreds more set to follow. So this is now, anyway, the phenomenon has taken on a life of its own. Obama, if you want to put an end to this, simple, come forward with the detailed birth certificate. Stop all your court fighting. Stop spending millions of dollars to prevent access to your vault copy, full detailed birth certificate, the one that the rest of us have to show repeatedly in life to get a passport. You've got to show a birth certificate, not the certificate of live birth, which is doctored anyway, which you put on the internet. So more power to Phil Berg. He is continuing to fight, and he will be rejoining us soon. Apparently so busy that he sometimes doesn't have time even for his regular media appearances, but we understand this perfectly. More power to Phil Berg. Go see ObamaCrimes.com and give him a contribution. Now, just here in the last segment, the question of the reparations and the war debts as a mass of fictitious capital, a cancerous growth on the world economic system, tended to stifle and strangle trade and production back in the 1920s and 1930s, similar to what the derivatives are doing today. Of course, the notional value of the derivative is $1.5 quadrillion, $1,500 trillion, and the reparations, $32 billion, but it's basically the entire value of Germany. And they're still paying. Germany is going to be paying the reparations until 2020. How interesting. 100 years after the end of World War One, and 100 years after the setting of this figure, which came a little bit after Versailles, they're still going to be paying. This is absolutely absurd. Talk about the dead hand of finance capital. There it is. The thing is, though, we're saying wipe out derivatives. Is there a precedent for it? Yes, there is. Herbert Hoover, of all people. Remember, in 1929, you have the U.S. stock market crash. This does not cause a world economic depression. What it does do is to undermine this crazy carousel where Morgan lends to Germany. The New York blowout means Morgan can't lend to Germany. What that means is then the Kreditanstalt of Vienna blows up, the Deutsche Bank of Germany blows up, the entire German banking system blows up. This then is communicated into Holland and England, and the British go off the gold standard. They default on gold payment September 1931. And as I've said 1,000 times, the central event of the world economic depression in the 1930s is not the New York stock market crash. That's simply a collapse. The disintegration is the disintegration of the world monetary system based on the pound sterling bill of exchange drawn on London, which occurs in September 1931. And it's done in bad faith by Lord Montague Norman, who is the individual who precursor of the International Monetary Fund World Bank system. He did it all himself with his friends like Benjamin Strong and Hjalmar Schacht. By 1931 in the summer, everybody can see that Germany can't pay and that the world system is going to go into a chaotic phase of exacerbated breakdown, disintegration, and so forth. Even Herbert Hoover had the sense to say, wait a minute, we got to stop this. So he says, let's have the Hoover moratorium. The Hoover moratorium says for 1 year, and this is the Achilles heel, for 1 year we're going to stop the reparations payments by Germany to France and the British, and we're going to stop the war debt payments by France and Britain to the U.S. government. That's the Hoover moratorium. 1 year, from June 1931 to June 1932. It takes a while for the U.S. Congress to approve it, so it's actually from December 1931 to December 1932. This is a good idea, but it's flawed fatally by the fact that it's only for a year. It's got to be for the duration of the crisis, for some long period, for 5 years or the duration of the crisis, whichever lasts longer. That's what you've got to do. So even Herbert Hoover had the idea of at least freezing the payments on the main mass of fictitious capital that was pressing down on the world economy. Now, remember, the attempts to pay the reparations and the war debts destroy production, set up the final crash into the world depression of the 1930s. Of course, politically, the effect of this is Hitler's issue. This is the demagogy of the Nazis focuses on the Diktat of Versailles and the reparations payments. So you've, as Keynes himself wrote in The Economic Consequences of the Peace, you're going to have, another war very soon. And here comes Hitler to bring it to you. So the question is, one year into the Hoover moratorium, we have this, I think, interesting parallel. The Lausanne Conference of June of 1932. The Lausanne Conference meets in Switzerland, and the question is what to do. It's June 16th to July 9th, 1932, the Lausanne Conference of all the main countries. The question is what to do. And they say we should permanently suspend the reparations and the war debts. Permanently. Now things have gotten worse, however, and the question is the U.S. has got to respond to this. The Lausanne Conference says we should permanently suspend this entire thing. The U.S. Congress responds in December 1932 saying no, that no foreign debt should be canceled or reduced. We demand the money. This is Coolidge, right? He said, they hired the money, didn't they? They took out the loans, they have to pay. That's called the sanctity of contracts. That's why we have millions of foreclosures here in the United States, is the Calvin Coolidge, Andrew Mellon mentality, right? You sign the contract, you have to go down and you have to die. December 1932, the U.S. Congress passes a resolution. No foreign debt should be canceled or reduced. Well, December 1932, the French say, okay, if that's how you're going to play, we default on war debt. We're not paying. And the French in December 1932 are followed by everybody else. Everybody defaults and it goes down in chaos. So the question now is you can choose an orderly freeze and an orderly destruction of derivatives or the fall of the world economy into chaos and the destruction of civilization if you try to keep going with bailouts of the derivatives. No more bailouts of the derivatives. Shut down the zombie banks. Wipe out derivatives. Shred them. Cancel them. Delete them. And we'll be back next week. Check the Act Independent website for that call to the Group of 20 meeting in London, which is going to be wipe out derivatives, shut down the zombie banks. See you next week.